hello, Daryl. Are you there?
Yes, Trip.
All right.
How are you?
I'm very well today. How are you?
Hey,
very well.
Hey, Daryl.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Doing good.
You sound really good. Your phone connection is better than normal.
Why are you great. I'm at work, actually. I just have gone into one of the center offices, and we'll talk for an hour, and then I go back to work. So.
Well, you're a teacher, right?
No. You mean for a living?
Yeah.
No, for a living, I work in a warehouse that supplies materials to shoemakers across Canada and some people in the States and some people in New Zealand and Australia. So that's what I do for a living.
Well, nobody gets enlightened, but for the nobody that never gets enlightened, you're rather enlightened warehouse dude.
Well, thank you. It's been interesting the last little while. The books and some of the other things I've been expressing have been getting a bit of attention, and people are curious about it. I think within a non-duality community, they're a little curious that I almost never use the word awareness. I never ask the question, who am I, and so on.
I notice you never use the word nothingness either, but before we get too deeply into that, I would like to introduce you to our listeners so that we can have a nice full recording here for you and for our website.
Okay.
Our very special guest today, author Daryl Bailey, has worked at various jobs, including ice fisherman, bus driver, suit salesman, child care worker, carpenter, and maintenance man, and now warehouse worker.
Yes.
From an early age, Daryl periodically experienced the various things in life as one great motion or action, and by the age of 14, began spending a portion of each day noticing the various sensations that would arise and pass. Puzzled, he began reading the works of philosophers like Jiddu Krishnamurti, Alan Watts, and others, who encouraged a direct exploration of life's movement. He also began exploring and practicing the awareness, concentration, and relaxation techniques offered in yoga, Buddhism, Taoism, Sufism, Christianity, and certain contemporary psychologies. This inquiry eventually led to an apprenticeship with the Advaita sage Robert Adams, who also experienced life as an unformed, inexplicable happening. And while Adams showed Daryl where his life might also be moving, Daryl spent another 6 years as a Buddhist meditation monk in England before disrobing and returning to Canada. At that time, there was a strong desire to distance himself from any spiritual organization or structure and return to a more ordinary way of living. Over time, Daryl shared with close friends a growing certainty that he was the doer of nothing and that all of existence is simply an unformed, indefinable happening. Daryl's book, Dismantling the Fantasy, shares his insights into the nature of our current reality. So, Daryl, given all these things that you don't do, that are typical in the non-duality world, what category, if you were the curator of your own library, what category would you place your book in?
Whoa, that's that's a good question. I don't know whether it fits. I mean, I guess generally it would be loosely in non-duality. And I mean, I consider the term non-duality a very loose term, because from my perspective, there really isn't anyone who has exactly the same sense of existence as anyone else. So within the non-dual communities, you have this general sense that what's happening in this moment is a totally indefinable event that presents itself, basically. It has no particular form. You know, we can all basically, you know, those that are drawn or expressed in this non-dual fashion, we can all generally agree on that sense of things, but each and every apparent individual who expresses that, or each and every apparent individual that points to that, points to it in a very unique way. And so, you know, often I have people phoning me up and or writing through on the website, and they're asking me to explain things in a very specific way. And I'm always wanting to point out to people that whoever is investigating this is never going to end up with exactly the same sensibility as someone else, because just as all the other expressions of nature are unique, so is each and every human being, and so is each and every apparent non-dual teacher So if we can't find any two snowflakes the same, I mean, a snowflake is a pretty simple manifestation of whatever this is. And if we can't find anything, any two of them identical in something as simple as that, it becomes absurd to expect that we're going to find two non-dual teachers that have exactly the same expression or exactly the same teaching. So again, my approach would loosely fall in that non-dual perspective. But I found this non-dual expression in almost every tradition I've ever investigated. So it's there very strongly in Christianity. It's there very strongly in Buddhism. It's there very strongly in Hinduism. It's there in pretty much everything I can find. I mean, even Einstein would, in his free time, walk around telling everybody that everything was on automatic.
Right on.
By the way, you write with great clarity, and you're definitely an original, just as all of these folks that we've been interviewing now for 2 years, each and every one of them, as you say, is a complete original, and the way it flows out of them is a unique perspective, and each one is a beautiful gem in its own. It's just it's remarkable, you know.
Exactly, and that's really ultimately that's the point I want to make. Like, if there is someone who's investigating this aspect of any particular spiritual tradition or this, what you would consider a non-dual philosophy, if they're investigating that, ultimately, really what this comes down to is supporting each and every expression of existence. So it doesn't matter whether you're a stone or you're a human being or you're a storm, it's a legitimate expression of existence. And, some expressions are dangerous, and that's fine, but it doesn't make them any less legitimate. And so this really is ultimately to legitimize my offering of this expression is really to point to the fact that we're all legitimate expressions of existence. And as you point out, each one a gem in some way.
Yeah.
Hey, right on.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to get into your particular gem here. We're going to look at different facets of it. But I thought maybe a nice way to start off would to be to give people a sense of where you're coming from. And I thought a great way might be for you to sort of share that metaphor of the cloud for a few moments, because it's such a perfect metaphor, and you do it so well.
Okay. So if there were a bunch of us lying on a hillside watching a cloud floating in the summer sky, we might see that cloud manifesting in a number of different ways, apparent forms. So one moment it might look like a person. Another moment it might look like a house. Another moment it might look like a horse. Another moment it might look like an entire battlefield of soldiers fighting. And if I was lying there in the midst of our group and I was saying, "Wow, look at that, you know, look, there's a bunch of soldiers," and I began saying that that was the reality, that the person that seemed to be there, the horse that seemed to be there, the house that seemed to be there, that these were realities, people in the rest of the group would start wondering what was wrong with me, because for everyone, it's quite apparent that there is only a cloud. The cloud has no particular form, and the cloud is expressing itself. Now that's for any human being that I've run across, any apparent human being that I've run across, if we were lying on a hillside watching a cloud, it would be obvious that that cloud had no particular form and that it was presenting itself. And in order to realize that, all we would have to do is watch that event that we call the cloud. So if I ask the average person on the street if they have the impression that everything in existence changes, again, pretty much everyone that I've ever met would say, yes, that's the fact. My experience in living life is that everything changes. And if I ask them, do you make that change occur? They would say no. And if I ask them, can you stop that changing? They would say no. So basically, everything in existence is the same mysterious event that a cloud essentially is, because if everything in our experience is changing, then we ultimately have no experience of a particular thing. Everything is then, we could call it movement, or we could call it, we could say it is formless. Whatever everything around us and everything apparently in us is, it ultimately is formless if it is always changing. And if it is changing on its own, if we're not making that change occur, and if we can't stop that change, then obviously it's the same situation as the cloud. It's a formless event presenting itself. So I'm just pointing out to people that the experience we already have does not back up the usual assumptions that we make about existence, because most people go around focusing on their storylines, and their storylines are always describing forms, various forms in relation to other forms, and they believe that those storylines about those forms are ultimate truth. So they lie awake at night concerned about the various storylines that they have, focused very intently on those storylines. And I'm simply pointing out that not one of us has an experience that backs up that focus. Our experience on a day-to-day level, our experience from moment to moment, is that everything is changing, and it's doing that all on its own, and that includes us. At one point, we were apparently 2 years old. At another point, we were apparently 4 years old. At another point, apparently 10, then 20, then 25, 30, wherever we're at now. And whatever we seem to be now is already gone. It's already moving on to another appearance. Because there is only an ever-shifting, inexplicable event presenting itself.
Right on. So I would like our listeners to know that if they have a comment or a question for Daryl, author Daryl Bailey, to please email it to me at zortacular, zortacular, @gmail.com, zortacular@gmail.com, and we'll ask Daryl while he's still here with us. So,
actually, Tripp, if I could, for a moment, I'd like to interject and amend something in your description of my progression, my experience. You left out Ruth Denison, and Ruth Denison was a very important portion of my process, if we're going to look at the apparent process that I went through. After many, many years of investigating things on my own, I began looking for a teacher that I felt I would, my approach would be compatible with. And even though she is listed as generally as a Vipassana teacher, so a mindfulness teacher within a Buddhist tradition, when I ran across her teaching, I felt that more than anyone I'd ever run across, she could invite a very detailed, very open exploration of the moment. And so I spent 9 years with her, just being around her and her approach. So I just wanted to add that to that intro that you gave, and to say that it was towards the end of my time with her. She basically forced me to go see Robert Adams. I had been avoiding it. He was giving talks at her husband's home in West Hollywood, and we lived out in the desert at her meditation center, and she would say, "Oh, you should go in and see Robert." And I would say, "Ruth, I don't really want anything to do with gurus. Like, I'm just not interested." And she said, "No, no, you should go see Robert." And so eventually, there was one weekend where she was going into Hollywood, and she said, "You're coming with me. You're going to meet Robert." So that's the way my connection with Robert Adams arose.
I think Ramana Maharshi told Robert Adams, whenever the crowd got more than 20 people, get up and leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured you'd mention Ruth. You have such an interesting life. I had to try to keep it down to, a half a minute thing otherwise.
No, I understand totally.
Okay. All right, now, everyone in this non-dual community are pretty aware of the fact that form is fleeting, and you say motion is truer than form, and your treatise is really about motion, but you never mention emptiness anywhere in your book. And the wizard here and I both are sort of maybe I'm attached to the idea that emptiness is truer than motion. Why nothing about nothing in your book?
Well, the whole expression that everything is actually motion, and that our basic experience of life, our common experience of life, is the fact that that motion feels somehow truer than the notion of form, that's really just set up to eradicate any attempt to quantify existence in any way whatsoever. So when I speak of motion or flow or action, I'm not actually trying to define anything. I'm just pointing to the contradiction within our experience, that we walk around trying to define form, and yet at the same time, everybody says everything changes. So it's just pointing out that contradiction, and once that contradiction is perhaps realized, I mean, for lack of a better term, in a very profound way, it becomes totally impossible to define existence in any way whatsoever. So the focus then is not on a definition. So the focus then doesn't really matter whether somebody's calling it emptiness or fullness, or somebody's calling it nothing, or somebody's calling it something. It's none of those definitions actually apply. And what we're left with is the event, the you know, in my attempts to point to it, it's the warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, pulsing, vibrating event of the moment, and the realization that that can't be described in any particular way, and that that event is presenting itself. So it's just a pointing to the event. It's not any attempt ultimately to define that event.
So there's no noun to cling to.
Exactly. Exactly. There's just a happening. There's a happening of this moment. Like right now, in this moment, there's what we would call the happening of this moment. Now, this can't be defined in any way whatsoever. So if we say it's Trip and John and Daryl having a conversation, that's not true, because the forms that we would call Trip and John and Daryl aren't stable forms. These so-called people are an event that have no particular form. I mean, we were all 1/8 of an inch long at one point in our mother's womb. We were 1 foot long. We're now the length we are. And whatever it seems to be right in this moment is on its way to something else. So even though it appears to have form, there is no particular form in this moment. Everything is on its way to something else.
So there's no thing.
There's no thingness
to cling that we can identify with.
Exactly.
So that leaves us free.
Exactly. And so ultimately within, you know, we could look at the non-dual tradition. So we could look at something like the Ashtavakra Gita. And towards the end of that Gita, it simply starts listing all these reams of things that existence is not. It is not consciousness. It is not God. It is not a person. It is not this. It is not that. And ultimately they don't come to say anything about it. They're just saying what it's not. And you can really sum up all of that by simply saying descriptions don't apply. So the Buddha ultimately declared that, and he said anyone who comes to what actually is, basically he called himself the Tathagata, which means one who is to thusness come, or one who is to thusness gone. It basically means someone who's come to what actually is. No longer describes existence in terms of physical forms, feelings, perceptions, mental activities, or states of consciousness. There is only an asankata, an unformed. So, you know, I can use the word movement, constant movement, but that just really means there's no form. So you could also say formless, but a lot of people object to using the word formless because in order... that somehow seems the diametrically opposed to form, and so in some way it's attempting once again to give form. The Buddha chose the word unform, but I don't really care what word people use. I mean, ultimately the attempt is to simply point to an event that can't be described in any way whatsoever, and the automatic quality of that event. So in this particular situation where it seems like Tripp and John and Daryl having a conversation. That's not really what's happening. There's an automatic event that's taking place here. So these apparent words that are arising in this moment, they're the only words that can arise in this moment. Whatever apparent response you have to these apparent words, that's the only apparent response you can possibly have, because you're not doing it. It's simply arising.
Wasn't it Robert Adams who said, everything is unfolding as it should?
Exactly. Robert would. Robert had a history of using pretty much everybody's approach, and so in some of the recorded teachings of his, it can get quite confusing, because he'll be using everyone's approach and everyone's terminology, because he felt a real kinship with all of it. At the time that I spent with him, and I didn't spend a lot of time with him, but the time that I did spend with him, he basically would just come into the room, and he would be sitting there waiting for people to assemble, and then he would lean over and he would press a button on a little cassette recorder, and it would play some, either a Western or Eastern song to God, and he would listen to that for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then he would press the off button, and then he would sit there and basically say, you are not the body, you are not the mind, there is only love. And that's all he would basically say. And he would say it, he sounded like Marlon Brando in The Godfather. You are not the body, you are not the mind, there is only love. So I sat there and I listened to him say this, and there was a group of about 35 people in the room. He would not allow anyone to advertise his presence anywhere, but he would say it was okay if you brought someone to the group, but he wouldn't allow any kind of mass media exposure of him. So I listened to that and I thought, well, okay, this is the first time I've ever been with a so-called enlightened being. I don't really understand clearly what he's saying, so maybe I can ask a question. And he had said, you know, if you want to ask a question, just ask a question. So I said, Robert. And he said, yes. I said, can we maybe put this a different way? And he said, yes. And I said, let's say a baby is being born. And he said, okay. I said, well, for every adult, so-called adult, watching the baby being born, there's a baby being born into the world. And he said, yes. And I said, but that's not happening for the baby. He said, no. I said, for the baby, it's just a pulsing, vibrating happening that has no storyline whatsoever. And he said, yes. So I said, well, and it seems as though in a little while, that baby will start being offered all kinds of words and definitions for existence. The focus will go on forms. And in a little while, that baby will begin thinking that he or she has been born into the world. And by the time they're 15 years old, they'll be sitting on a park bench somewhere on a sunny day, and they'll be totally lost in questions about life. Where did I come from? Where am I going to? What's it all about? He said, yes. And I said, but it's still the same totally inexplicable, vibrant, pulsing event it was when it first presented itself. And he said, yes. So at that point, I realized, okay, that's pretty straightforward. We are not the body. We are not the mind. These are just fantastic constructs of based on forms that don't essentially exist and sounds that have no really essential meaning. They're just labels attached to forms that don't actually exist. So they can't actually define what this vibrant pulsing event is. There's just the vibrant pulsing event. And the love, when he said there is only love, the love that arises, or him saying there is only love, the love is just the openness of that event. It's just the full happening of the moment, which is always there. But the apparent focus in so many apparent cases seems to be very tightly on the storyline.
Hmm. Well, Daryl.
Right on.
Daryl, I'm going to have to stop you right there for a moment.
Sure.
And we have just a comment from a listener, Gary, who'd like to say, we can only duplicate and replicate. We cannot originate. Do you have any response to that one?
We can't even duplicate or replicate. We're not doing anything. The bottom line, and first of all, let me say, everything I'm offering here is simply for your consideration. I'm not going to say this is the one and only way to look at existence. I'm simply offering a perspective, and if you relate to it, that's great, and if you don't, that's great. So the bottom line in this perspective is that there is only the happening of this moment. I mean, I can't even really say that. It just points to this pulsing event of this moment. And that can't be defined in any way whatsoever. So that's it, bottom line. So it can't be defined ultimately as a bunch of people doing anything at all. So not only are we not originating anything, we're also not replicating or duplicating. Because whatever this is, it's just doing what it does. And it's all on automatic.
Right. So one of the ways in which your particular gem shines in its own unique way, it's often because of an emphasis that a sage will place on a certain aspect of that gem. And you say that freedom ultimately comes from not defining. And I thought that was true.
Exactly. If we're trying to nail existence down as some particular form that we can identify, once again, we're going to be frustrated because everyone's common experience indicates that there is no particular form, because anyone who apparently has lived for an apparent number of years will ultimately come to say that everything changes. Doesn't matter whether it's the weather or your mood or your body or the government. You know, you yourselves, I mean, within the United States, there's been so many changes in the last few years, and right now the world economic system is shifting in such a way that, once again, this indicates that it doesn't matter how stable something seems to be, it is this inexplicable movement. And so if we really examine what we've gotten, you know, apparently all of us have been trained to say certain words when somebody points to a particular form. So I learned to say nose, I learned to say ear, I learned to say foot, I learned to say boy, girl, cup, weather. I learn all of these sounds, but if we really examine that closely, first of all, they're pointing to something, some apparent thing that doesn't actually have a form. All of us say that everything is changing, so that must mean that existence is ultimately formless. And the sounds that we're given, if we lived in a different country, we would be given a different set of sounds. So these sounds are just agreed upon and offered as a way of labeling these apparent forms. But if we all agreed, instead of saying words like people and consciousness and awareness, we could say words like blix and flute and wazzle. If we agreed, those would work just as well in pointing to these apparent forms. Now, if I sit down with you and I have a conversation about people and consciousness and awareness, it would seem as though you understand something. But if I sat down and started speaking about blix and flute and wazzle, you'd think I was speaking gibberish. And the point is, the word people, the word consciousness, the word awareness, that's gibberish too. There's simply an event that can't be explained in any way whatsoever. And this is ultimately what you find in all of the great spiritual teachings that I know of, the so-called spiritual teachings that I know of. So ultimately in the Bible, one of the more profound expressions is that God is spirit, and it is in God that we live and move and have our being, and that man does not direct his steps in any way whatsoever. So again, we have this great unformed event, the great spirit. I mean, here, like, what do you call a happening that has no particular form? I mean, there are many phrases you could use to point to it. You could call it the great spirit. You could call it movement. You could call it the river of life. You could call it the unformed ocean of existence. You could call it the cloud of unknowing. you could call it the Dharma Mega, the cloud of virtue. All of them are ultimately pointing to this happening or presence or event that has no particular form whatsoever. So, and they're all ultimately saying that's all that fundamentally exists. And that there's no way to describe that. So the Bible says there's, you know, when they ask, there's a situation where someone's asking God, who are you? And God says, I am the I am. So I am the happening. I am the presence. I am the event. And
the ever-fresh mystery.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's never the same from moment to moment. People cannot find two identical snowflakes. They can't find two identical leaves on two trees. They can't find two identical trees. They can't find two people with the same breath rate, the same heartbeat, the same skin composition. They think now the easiest way to identify a human being is through their skin composition because it's so radically different from each and every other human being. And so what we have is an event that never expresses itself the same way twice. Historians don't agree that history repeats itself. Historians will say history approximates itself. It's never the same from moment to moment. And so, you know, fortunately, whatever this is, it doesn't seem to be totally erratic. However, even that can be challenged because physicists, if they really start coming up with a very detailed description of existence, they find themselves basically describing chaos, and that's what chaos theory was all about. The fact that somehow a butterfly flapping its wings in South America is related to a hurricane that shows up on the shores of some country far to the north. Again,
this warehouse dude has a crackling frontal cortex, doesn't he, wizard? I think you've got to be the most brilliant warehouse worker in the world. All right, look, in your book, which is a conversation of it's three conversations that take place over 3 days with maybe this is not necessarily these were not real conversations. These are constructed conversations. Probably.
They were not one conversation.
Okay.
So they were remembrances of many, many conversations that I'd had with many, many people over a number of years.
Okay. So I thought one interesting section was the process of disillusionment that happens as people's stories fall away. All these things they've been grabbing onto, they now realize are not real and they're not sort of dependable things to place your confidence in or whatever. It's replaced by this sense of awe and wonder and amazement at this kind of this parade that's just unfolding. Can you maybe give people a sense of how that takes place in someone as it's taken place in you, because so they know that there's, you know, there's something even more fantastic to replace the security blanket of objects and forms and all that?
Again, this apparent awakening will happen for each apparent person in a unique way. So just generally in my own particular situation, really, I had been relating or seemed to be cognizant or aware of this large event of existence from a very early age, but it wasn't until I was in my 40s that at one point, after having left all the traditions and returned to what I considered a much more ordinary existence here in Winnipeg, I was lying in bed one night and I was reading a book by Ramesh Balsekar, and I ran across a particular line. I can't even remember what that line was, but generally it was saying, Balsekar was saying that no one has ever actually had the experience of directing their lives. And my eyes left the page, and the mind just said, you haven't done anything, ever. And in that moment, I realized I could not find any actual example of directing my life. So, you know, people would say, well, I do this and this comes as a result. But then, what, you know, if we want to enter the chain of cause and effect, we can't just leave it as two points on the chain of cause and effect, because whatever cause arises has to be the effect of another cause. And so it became very apparent that I was simply an expression of the universe, the one turning. I mean, that's what universe literally means. So, and I was shaken by that. I thought, whoa, I've really gone, something's happened here. I've maybe taken a step a little too far in the wrong direction. But then I realized, the more I considered it, that no, this was a very grounded assessment of existence. And it wasn't some kind of weird state of mind. There wasn't any craziness involved with it. It was just a very simple fact. But there was something in the whole process that just did not want to accept that just not being in charge. And so there was a fear. There was a fear that, I mean, and I had experienced that fear earlier with Robert Adams. I mean, when I got together with Robert Adams, it was very apparent that he was not interested in anything other than the large event of the moment. And for instances, his eyes might be attracted to particular forms, but very quickly they would drift away from those particular forms and simply open up to the entire event of the moment. So, you know, I had felt instinctively that somehow I was moving in that direction, but I sure didn't want to get there quickly. And I, you know, returned to my own particular interests. I mean, that's just the way I was expressed. But in this moment, when I was reading this line in the book, and it became apparent there was only the movement of the universe, there was still some hesitation about that and concern about that. But over time, that fear wore away, because I realized nothing other than the fantasies were disappearing. However, along with that, I mean, when you lose your storyline about being somebody in particular, you know, we often think of ourselves as somebody special in a certain way, and it can be either negative or positive. So if you think about yourself very negatively in a certain way, that's what's making you special. And if you think about yourself positively in a certain way, that's also making yourself something special. So there was this feeling of losing certain important things, and a question like, if it keeps moving the way it's moving, like, what's going to happen? Am I going to lose relationship? am I going to find myself sitting in a room somewhere, not able to communicate with anyone? But of course that didn't happen, because what became more apparent as this apparent time process went on was that there was just more a registering of the magic of it all, that I don't have to do anything to be what I am.
It must have been a great relief.
Incredible relief.
Of the doership and in the illusion of making choices, and
exactly it just became the feeling that there's nothing to be concerned about here. There is only a totally inexplicable, vibrant, pulsing event presenting itself, and that's all that ever is. And there is only that movement or that event, that flowing, let's say event or happening, rather than movement, because I notice a lot of people have difficulty with the word movement at a certain point. But there is only this inexplicable event presenting itself. It's never anything other than this inexplicable event presenting itself. It has no form. There isn't anyone causing that event. And absolutely everything we identify as a particular form, or even the apparent chain of cause and effect, is an expression of this totally inexplicable happening.
And nobody's in charge.
Nobody's in charge. Nobody's superior to anyone else. The whole idea that somebody is a superior expression of nature is a totally ridiculous notion. Each and every so-called individual is a portion of this inexplicable happening, and they're just as legitimate an expression as any other. And it will all play out in whatever way it plays out. However, you know, when the focus or the realization comes to this inexplicable happening, just this vibrant event or force or whatever you want to refer to it as, all ultimately the concerns about it going in the wrong direction or giving rise to things that you don't want it to give rise to, ultimately those have to be relinquished because there's no choice in any of this. It will present itself the way it presents itself.
Beautiful.
We've got increasing numbers of questions from listeners here. There's like three, but we'll get to them shortly. But maybe we can keep our responses shorter so we can pack some of these questions in.
Sure.
Okay. One thing I wanted to acknowledge was that a kind of comfort that comes that you've described so beautifully in your book. You say thoughts will come and go with the underlying acknowledgement they can't possibly be true. And I know that I found that for myself as I ripen into realization of what's actually going on, that it's not that the so-called real isn't really happening, but rather underlying it all is simply a realization that it's not true. It's actually not.
Yes,
substance.
And you're not left with something that you can hang on to. You're left with a bubbling event that you have absolutely no way of saying what it is or where it's going or what it's doing. I mean, Christ ultimately had that as a teaching. He said the wind blows wherever it blows. You can't know where it's coming from and you can't know where it's going to, and it's exactly the same for everything born of spirit.
All right, I'm gonna mention these. I'm gonna ask these questions. There's two here, and Gary had some more, but I'm gonna get the other ones on that we haven't asked, and then you can kind of address them as you will over the remaining 18 minutes.
Okay. Sure.
Okay, from Stefan in New Jersey, he says, "Thank you for a wonderful interview. Aren't the illusion of free will and the attendant illusion that we have a modicum of control over certain aspects of our behavior useful? For instance, I have to seemingly decide which watermelon to choose." Okay, there's one question. Second question from Michael Pellegrino is about stillness. It seems that we are asked by many teachers to look for a point of stillness within the movement. Do you have or know of this point of stillness? I was like, somebody, my phone rang and blanked out my screen. Do you have or know of this point of stillness that doesn't move?
And that was the second one, right?
That was the second one, yeah. So,
With the first one, this realm of, or this sense of free will or choice, is that useful? We don't really have to consider ultimately what's useful or not useful, because even the terms useful and not useful are an attempt to describe something that has no particular description. And you will be presented in whatever way you're presented. So on a daily basis, it may feel appropriate for the focus to go on a sense of choosing and assessing certain situation, assessing certain situations, and that itself is ultimately a totally inexplicable event presenting itself. We didn't decide somewhere along the line that we were going to put our focus in one particular apparent place or another. We are simply expressions of this great mysterious event. No one ultimately really knows what he is or she is. We're just a totally inexplicable happening that's simply happening. So for instance, in this conversation with you, I can't, or in this response to this particular question, I don't get a choice in what the response will be. What comes out is the only thing that can come out. It's all on automatic. And so even if there's an assessment of what I think, what I'm apparently think would be useful or not useful, all of that's an automatic event. It simply occurs.
Okay. So the second question, is there a point of stillness that we might find ourselves attracted to or engaged in?
I have no experience of a point of anything. You know, any attempt to say there's some form of any kind, you know, if you want to find a point of stillness or you're searching for a point of stillness, you can go on a 10-day retreat and practice concentration exercises all you want for 10 days, and you may discover some point of stillness, but just give it another day and it'll be wiped away totally the moment you come back into society. Perhaps that point of stillness is referring to a sense of, you know, the falling away of any concern. So I remember Ajahn Chah, who was a great Thai meditation master, he was the teacher to Ajahn Sumedho, who I ordained under within the Theravada tradition. He would make reference to, he would say, just be a still flowing stream. A still flowing stream. And then he would laugh about that because he enjoyed that contradiction, stillness and flowing. But what he was ultimately pointing to is once you realize the automatic event, then there isn't any concern ultimately about how it flows because there is only that flowing. And so in that total absence of concern, there is a place of rest. There is a sense of rest, a sense of perhaps you could call it stillness. I don't really know. I'd have to hear more. This person is saying certain teachers point to a place of stillness. But really, I find sometimes these words are very misleading because a life is a bubbling event. And, if you use a word like stillness, you'll get people looking for something.
Looking for it.
Yeah, something that doesn't exist. It has no form. It cannot be described in any way whatsoever. It just happens. And so, in my own particular case, there can be moments where it's just felt as, it would be like you're standing in an ocean and you can feel the waves kind of pushing against you, and it's almost as though everything in existence is simply that forceful movement, but it's not really pushing against anything. It's just the movement itself or the force itself. But I tend not to use these words. I tend not to describe my experience in great detail because my experience isn't really important to anyone else. I can describe this. I can point to this general event that has no ultimate explanation. But if I start getting too much into my own personal expression, then I'll get people thinking they should experience existence the way I experience existence. And I don't see that as being possible. And I don't see that my experience is the ultimate experience of existence, or I'm simply one of the many mysterious expressions of existence. And to me, they're all legitimate. So if somebody is apparently pulled to a non-dual expression or a non-dual perspective, I mean, that's great. I would love, if they have questions about that, I'll sit down and I enjoy talking with them about how, look at our usual views of existence, look at your actual experience, and you'll realize you already know that it's a totally formless event presenting itself and that ultimately it can't be defined in any way. But I'm not then going to say it needs to be experienced in a certain way, because some people will apparently still put the focus on form, but ultimately realize that that's not true, and another person might experience it as a flowing, and another person might experience it as something they call stillness. But in all cases, it's a happening that can't ultimately be described in any way whatsoever. And I will avoid describing it in great detail or my experience in great detail because no one else is going to have exactly that experience of life.
All right.
I found it resting in the mystery.
Yeah.
That this narrator, I that wants to cling to a noun of a body or storyline, that has a certain, comes to a stillness within which the flow is more recognized, more in the here and now with the ever fresh, when this doership idea is being relinquished.
Yes, that's another way of expressing this, and there are moments where Jiddu Krishnamurti used to say that there are moments when it actually feels like you're being carried in the ocean of existence, and there are other moments where that's as light as a breeze on a spring day, and you can barely remember what it was you had realized a few days earlier, and so yes, we can have those moments where it feels like this intense stillness, and yet that stillness is just charged with the vibrant energy of existence. And an hour later, you know, we're in a conversation with somebody at the dinner table, and it's that sense of that stillness has been wiped away, apparently.
You know, you stump your toe.
Yeah, exactly. You start screaming at everyone. So,
Daryl, I like your pointing better than mine. One of the things I always like to say to people, and that's because you got to use words, but I do speak of a personal spiritual awakening that happened about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I won't get into what it was because I've done it numerous times on this show, but you say there is no spiritual awakening. So could you, and I don't necessarily disagree, but could you edify me on that?
Well, again, ultimately, this is a totally indefinable happening. And so if you're wanting to sit there focusing on your storyline of how you awakened, you're once again not, or it seems as though you're not relating to the event itself, the inexplicable happening. So the bottom line for me is that in any moment, there's just an event taking place. There is no explanation of that in any way whatsoever. And, you know, in my own particular expression, there seems to be an inclination to really emphasize that. Because if we, you know, if you emphasize this story of awakening too much, you're making something, or it seems as though we're making something special out of something. You know, even that sense of specialness, if you let go of that or see through that, you come to something much greater, something much more magical. So if we walked into a forest, we wouldn't stand there criticizing any expression of a forest. So we wouldn't say that the shrubs weren't trying as hard or they weren't as accomplished as the tall cedars. And we wouldn't say that a beetle wasn't as accomplished or working as hard as a butterfly. All of them are simply the various gems that nature expresses. And it's the same way within the human realm. To ultimately say that somehow awakened beings are more special than the average so-called person on the street, you know, or to say that the Buddha was somehow a purer expression of existence than the person who wants to be chairman or chairperson of IBM, I mean, this isn't true. They're both mysterious expressions of existence. So, again, as you pointed out, I mean, we have to use stories, or we do use stories. And so we can make reference to this so-called awakening process, but really, ultimately, there isn't any so-called awakening process either. They're just simply a totally indefinable event doing what it does. And those of us who seem to be so-called individuals interested in spiritual awakening, we're ultimately a totally indefinable event doing what it does. And the so-called perspective that we're people interested in a spiritual awakening, that's ultimately a fantasy.
Well, you whip around from perspective to perspective with great agility.
Yeah. What I hear is a real acceptance of the ordinary. And in that ordinary, there's an exquisite magic.
Exactly.
That's already happening without having some special event happening or going back to some event you had in the seeming past, but ever fresh.
Exactly.
Right now.
This happening is a totally magical event. Like, you know, I'm apparently sitting here talking with you, but actually there's just what we would call light and sound and pulsation and vibration, and it has no particular form. These words have no particular form. They're always flowing on to something else. The conversation has no particular form. It's always flowing on to something else. And so the most ordinary everyday event is the Great Spirit. The most ordinary everyday event is God presenting itself. The most ordinary everyday event is Buddha mind or Buddha nature. It's like Wang Po said, Buddha nature, Buddha mind, is everything that we see, and it has no form. It's everything we know right now, and it has no particular form.
Yep. Well, it seems to me, and this is just a little thing that I feel strongly about, but and from what I've learned from so many sages we've talked to over the last couple of years, but it's important to let the one with whom one's communicating to know which perspective you're taking when you speak to them. You can either be taking that perspective that you describe as life is motion accomplishing itself.
Yes. Right?
So you're in that perspective. You are life itself accomplishing itself, speaking to life itself accomplishing itself, so-called apparent other. That's one way you can be. Or you can be assuming, for the purposes of communicating to them, yourself as an identified person called Trip, right?
Yes, yeah.
And it, depending on which one of those perspectives you have taken, the words that come out of your mouth are either appropriate or not. You know what I'm saying? And so when I speak to someone and I say I had a spiritual awakening, when I speak like that, I'm speaking from the perspective of an identified guy named Trip,
yeah,
right? But from that perspective, which is the perspective 99% of the time of the people that I'm speaking with,
yeah,
it makes sense. But yeah, then you have to disabuse the notion as well. If you're going to have a thorough communication, you have to say, huh?
Do you think you have a choice about that?
Like the lockdown I was in for 48 hours? Daryl, I was just in a maximum security lockdown, man, with 48 inmates in a little room. It was amazing.
Whoa.
It was heavy, man.
Actually, that's a good point, because somebody once invited me to a local prison here, and they told me I was just going to consult with some of the management, but I ended up in a room with a number of the prisoners, and they asked me to present a meditation teaching. And so I basically ended up presenting what came out was what might be offered to the average middle-class North American. And, it became very apparent after I left that I probably should have been offering some kind of samurai training as a basic introduction, because these guys weren't interested in opening up to the moment in any kind of sensitive way. They would be more interested in what might be strong and strength building. So,
oh my God, these guys, these 20-year-olds, 25, most of them big African-American dudes, man, they went around this cage all day and all night. Basically, actually, this was the first group of people I've been among that use the MF-er word more than I do. They'd be basically going around MF-er this and the N-word that about everything. It was basically a all about violence and,
yeah,
and strength, right?
Yeah.
So, I had to keep my distance from these guys, but this was one of the really, really cool things that happened. When I finally knew that I was actually going to get out of there,
right,
and the paperwork was being processed, first of all, I had this huge flood of emotion that came through me. I was weeping, but I wasn't weeping, actually, because of my condition. I was actually weeping about the fact that I had been put in there by somebody that I loved. But in any event, I had this huge release, and I knew I was getting out. And I had a satsang with the lockdown for about 10 minutes. For 10 minutes, the lockdown stopped being about violence,
right,
and aggression and strength and all that. And they actually tuned in, and they actually even – I got through for a second. For a second, there was a fleeting recognition. A couple of them took some notes even and wrote down my name.
Oh, interesting.
And then it went back to violent world. And I walked out, man. I was full of love for them. But, man, they're still in there right now. And it's it ain't beautiful in there. It's not a pretty scene.
Yeah, and it's very interesting what you're pointing out, because you never know what's going to happen. You know, you can be speaking to a group of people, and it just seems as though they've totally stonewalled you. They have no interest whatsoever. But there will be a couple of people in that group that may be relating to this in a very strong way. You just never know.
Well, we've been relating to you in a very strong way. We've come to the end of a wonderful hour with a particularly clear and brilliant man, Daryl Bailey. Thank you, Daryl, so much for joining
us. Thank you, Daryl.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. If I could, I just want to say that I don't travel very often, but I am going to be in London, England, at the end of August, and there will be some gatherings taking place at that time, and people can look up details on my website. So once again, thank you very much for allowing me to present this perspective.
Our audience was overwhelmingly enthused at your joining us today. I must say that.
Oh, wonderful. I never know exactly how it's going to go.
Well, we loved it, and we'll be sending you an MP3 of the show, and you'll be up on our website in the next few days.
Great. Thank you very much. Both of you take care, and good luck in your own unique unfoldings, and maybe we'll talk again in the future.
Likewise.
All right. Be well.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Music is a celestial sound, and it is the sound that controls the whole universe.
മറവിയുടെ മറം നിൽക്കുന്നതാണ് നമ്മുടെ പല ഉത്സവങ്ങളുടെയും ഈ ലക്ഷ്യത്തെ ഏറ്റവും നന്നായി നമ്മൾ
ഓർമ്മപ്പെടുത്താണ്
Just where you are at this moment is the absolutely optimum place you are to be at this moment from a spiritual point of view for your optimum growth.
Into this empty and yet totally alive, vibrant, mysterious world.